Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV. Today, my guest is Salon.com's Glenn Greenwald, the author of several best-selling books, including How Would a Patriot Act and A Tragic Legacy. Glenn has also just authored a Cato Institute policy study on drug decriminalization in Portugal and the lessons that we can take from this virtually completely successful experiment. Let's talk about drug decriminalization in Portugal. Your paper is Lessons for Creating Fair and Successful Policies. First, tell us, what is the difference in Portugal between decriminalization and legalization?
Well, the difference in general is the idea that legalization means that there are no longer any legal prohibitions of any kind on drug consumption, usage, or possession. Whereas in a decriminalized framework, the law continues to prohibit drug usage, but it's completely removed from the criminal sphere, so that if you violate that prohibition or do the activity that the law says you cannot do, you're no longer committing a crime, you cannot be turned into a criminal by the state. Instead, it's deemed to be an administrative offense only, and you're put into an administrative proceeding rather than a criminal proceeding.
Explain very quickly what happened in Portugal.
Well, what's interesting is the impetus behind decriminalization, which took place in 2001, was not that there was some drive to have a sort of libertarian ideology perfected based on the idea that adults should be able to use whatever substances they want, nor was it because there's some idyllic upper middle class setting. I mean, Portugal is a very poor country. It's not Luxembourg or Monaco or something like that. In fact, in the 1990s, they had a spiraling out of control drug problem. Addiction was skyrocketing. Drug-related pathologies were increasing rapidly. And they were sort of taking this step out of desperation, and they convened a council of apolitical policy experts and gave them the mandate to determine which optimal policy approach would enable them to best deal with these drug problems. And the council convened and studied all the various options. And decriminalization was the answer to the question, how can we best limit drug usage and drug addiction? And it was a policy designed to do that.
And one of the things that you find is that, in fact, decriminalization, which removes a certain amount of sanction from drug use, it actually correlates with less drug use.
Absolutely. And you can look at the empirical evidence, which is quite compelling and unambiguous in many senses. In a lot of demographic groups, especially the key demographic groups in Portugal, 15 to 19 years old, for instance, from 2001, when decriminalization was institutionalized, until, say, 2007, there has been a decrease in absolute terms in the prevalence rates of drug usages.
What explains that? Because, I mean, a kind of basic theory would say if you make drugs less, if you lower the cost of doing drugs by making it less criminally offensive, you would have more of it.
Well, there's several aspects. One is the concern that policymakers had, the frustration in the 1990s when they were criminalizing, is the more they criminalized, the more the usage rates went up. And one of the reasons was because when you tell the population that you will imprison them or treat them as criminals if they identify themselves as drug users, or you learn that they're using drugs, what you do is you create a barrier between the government and the citizenry, such that the citizenry fears the government, which means that government officials can't offer treatment programs, they can't communicate with the population effectively, they can't offer them services. And so there was this barrier that drug officials had and couldn't overcome when criminalization was in place. But more importantly, when you spend all your money on arrest and prosecuting and imprisoning people for drug usage, it means there's no money for things like funding treatment or educational campaigns or harm reduction programs. And once Portugal decriminalized, a huge amount of money that had gone to putting its citizens into cages was freed up, and it enabled the government to provide meaningful treatment to people who wanted it. And so addicts were able to turn into non-drug users, and usage rates went down.
What is the what's the relevance for the United States? We have an incredibly vexed history with drug policy. We also have much higher than average drug usage rates. We have more people in prison because of drugs, et cetera.
Well, I mean, I think the relevance is obvious, which is we have debates all the time now about things like drug policy reform and decriminalization, and it's based purely in speculation and fear-mongering of all the horrible things that are supposedly going to happen if we loosen our drug laws. And we can remove ourselves from the realm of the speculative by looking at Portugal, which actually decriminalized 7 years ago in full every drug, and see that none of those parade of horribles that's constantly warned of by decriminalization opponents actually came to fruition. Lisbon didn't turn into a drug haven for drug tourists. The explosion in drug usage rates that was predicted never materialized. materialized. In fact, the opposite happened. And interestingly, the populace was split before decriminalization as to whether it was a good idea 8 years ago, whereas now there's a virtual consensus across the political spectrum in Portugal that decriminalization has succeeded and there's no movement to return to the criminalized framework.
Let's switch gears a little bit. At Salon, as well as in your books, you write a lot about civil liberties. You were an unsparing critic of George W. Bush for all totally understandable reasons on civil liberties. How is Obama shaping up on civil liberties?
Not very good. I think that some of the signs are still inconclusive. For example, there was a flurry of symbolic executive orders in the first week designed to placate civil libertarians.
Including
myself, yes. But it didn't. It worked for about a day or so, although it was clear from the beginning that most of the difficult questions were put off. So if you close Guantanamo in a year, that's a marginally good thing. But then if you retain the right or the claimed right to detain people without due process, or worse, you create perniciously named national security courts that are by design intended to constrict due process and make it easier to detain people without having to prove their guilt, and you move that into the United States, you actually transplant Guantanamo from Cuba into the United States, that actually could make things a lot worse. And they've retained a lot of executive power theories that Bagram detainees have no habeas corpus rights, that state secrets enable the president to bar entire lawsuits, even ones that challenge his legality.
And he's been slow to release various torture memos, right?
That's right. In fact, there are three in particular that are supposedly the most graphic detail, and graphic not in terms of intelligence disclosures, but in terms of authorizing what are clearly war crimes that are still concealed, and the ACLU has continuously been battling.
What is guiding Obama? I mean, I think all of us expected that Obama would be better on civil liberties and better on executive power than Bush had been. Mm-hmm. What is guiding his decision-making on these types of issues?
I mean, one can only speculate, of course, but I think that what is a principal concern is that the more disclosures there are about how extreme the government's conduct was during the Bush era, the more the pressure will increase, both domestically and especially internationally, to actually do something about it. I mean, if the evidence is graphic and sufficiently vivid that our government committed war crimes, brutal war crimes, how do you justify, while paying lip service to the rule of law, the fact that your own government, successor government, isn't investigating or prosecuting? And I think they have a paralyzing political fear of what will happen if they're forced into investigating or prosecuting. And so one of the things they're trying to do is use these secrecy instruments to keep all of that behind the wall of secrecy that the Bush administration operated behind.
Obama on drug policy, during the campaign, he said he would end raids on medical marijuana dispensaries in states where they're legal. Eric Holder, his AG, said yes, they were going to do that. There have been a couple of raids since then. Do you think Obama will be good on drug policy or fair to middling?
Well, I think things are quite preliminary, but I thought it was actually rather discouraging. One could even say infuriating to watch him respond to the question that people who he invited online to submit questions and vote on them decided was the most important one. He sort of scoffed at the question about drug legalization, kind of reacted like an adolescent would, giggling and snickering at the very mention of marijuana. And I don't think anyone expected him to advocate legalization, but the idea that he reinforced the notion that it was a frivolous concern and that the only people interested would be people who want to get high or who are otherwise freakish, I thought was a very discouraging sign. And as you say, the DEA in the last week raided a perfectly legitimate medical marijuana dispensary in San Francisco that had a permit from the health department, going in with guns and raiding it, and it seemed to be a violation of that policy as well. So I don't think the signs are very encouraging initially.
Well, maybe we'll meet again in Portugal then.
That'd be great. Yeah. And we could take advantage of the drug laws and do some field research.
Thank you very much. Our guest has been Glenn Greenwald of Salon.com, who has authored a Cato Institute public policy paper on drug decriminalization in Portugal. Thanks again for coming.
My pleasure.